Okay, let me just share my screen with you. See what we got over here. Here we go. Okay, see it? Perfect. We'll see if anyone wants to come in a minute. Okay. So today's topic, I think is a pretty exciting one. It's a bit controversial, I would say. Hi, Chaim. Hope you're with us. Chaim should be joining us soon. I'd say it's a bit controversial. Chaim, if you do you have do you see the source sheet? Do I need to share it again?
Is clearly visible. I see it very well.
Beautiful. And that is the idea of Reshit Tzmicha Geulatenu. Right? Today we observe the holiday of Chag HaAtzmaut, the holiday of independence, the day of independence. And I want to make clear that this discussion is not about whether or not we should enthusiastically celebrate the State of Israel. I'm taking that as a given. Of course, we should. There's so many things we have to thank Hashem for. So many amazing things that people generations ago never even imagined. But the question, there's another question that I like to study, and I think it's actually complex and it's complicated, and I think can even get heated depending on who you ask. And that is this phrase that we say when we say the Tefillah Shalom HaMedina, which what I mean by that is every week in shul when we're in shul, back in those ancient times when people actually went to a synagogue and prayed together, may they speedily return. So there is a prayer that we recite every Shabbat for the welfare of the State of Israel. And at the very beginning of that prayer, we recite the following. If you look at source one over here, Avinu Shebashamayim, Sori Yisrael V'Goalo, Barechet Medinat Yisrael, Reshit Tzmicha Geulatenu. Our Father in heaven, Rock of Israel and its Redeemer, bless the State of Israel, the first flowering of our redemption. Reshit Tzmicha Geulatenu. Now, that phrase is quite a loaded one. We're making quite a statement that the State of Israel, Medina Israel, is the first flowering of our redemption. So if I would ask you, what when you hear those words, Reshit Tzmicha Geulatenu, the first or the beginning of the sprouting or flowering of the Geula, what do you think that means?
Well, as some people can interpret it to mean the Mashiach's right around the corner.
So Mashiach, that's the Geula we're referring to. What about the words tzmicha? When you think of sprouting, what do you think that means? That's the beginning of the sprouting. Let me phrase the question this way. If you were writing a prayer for the welfare of Israel, right? That's what we're doing. We're praying to Hashem, he should take care of Israel. Would you include this phrase? That the state of Israel is the beginning of the flowering of our redemption. Would you put that in there? Or what would be a reason to be reluctant to put that phrase in there? That's a good question. I think Chaim's telling us, and I think he's right on this one, that the Geula we're referring to, it's the beginning of our redemption from exile. And it's the start of the ultimate redemption. Sorry, it's more than the start, right? I had to look at that email. I'm sorry about that. This idea that it's our redemption, certainly is an exciting one. It's also a bit, I would say, a presumptuous one. Meaning the question is, can we be sure that this is indeed the beginning of the redemption? Do we know this definitively? Can we say this confidently? Is it worth making such a statement that the state of Israel, the Hakamat HaMedina, Medina Israel, is the beginning of the ultimate redemption process? The 1948, let's say. That could be. It's quite okay. That could be. So, well, I don't know that it doesn't. We don't say necessarily that the founding of the state is the beginning. We say the state itself, that there is a state, that we have an independent country. That is the beginning of the redemption process. That is what we say every single Shabbat. That this is the first step, as it were, for Mashiach to come. So there's a lot really to think about when we say this phrase. And I think it's worth thinking about all three of these things. What reshit, that the idea that the redemption has stages. The idea that it is not going to be something that happens right away. The idea that it's going to be a process, maybe a very long process. The idea of tzmicha is something to unpack. In what ways it's sprouting, and the idea that what redemption are we talking about? What should it look like? These are all really controversial questions. Now, just to note, where does this phrase come from? Why do we say reshit tzmicha gulatenu? So the truth is, and I'm going to give credit where it's due here, this is a really fascinating topic as to whether or not we should see the seeds of redemption in our state. And part of what I want to think about is twofold. Number one, is this something we should readily endorse, this idea that it's to say with certitude that the state of Israel begins the redemption process? Number two, if not, does it make us any less, let's say, Zionistic? Are we less enthusiastic about the founding of the state of Israel if we don't say that it's the beginning of the redemption process? Does that show that we're not appreciative? Are we doing something wrong if we were reluctant to say Reshit Tzmicha Gulatenu?
Can I please make a comment?
Absolutely.
Words Medinat Yisrael, one can talk about, because if we're talking about the state of Israel in this prayer, so when we talk about Geula, we do talk, at least I think there's this concept of people returning to Eretz Israel, not to Medinat Yisrael. Because let's say 200 years ago, 300 years ago, there was no such thing as Medinat Yisrael. But thousands of years ago, there was a place called the Land of Israel, Eretz Israel.
So this is Charles actually makes an amazing point, a very relevant point, which is that even if you agree, even if you contend that the events which have unfolded in the past hundreds of years, not even beginning in the 1800s, even if you agree that those are the beginning of this redemption process, it doesn't necessarily follow that you believe that the state itself, that we should have a government, is necessarily part of that process. Meaning, is it Medinat Yisrael that's Tzmicha Gulatenu, or is it our return to Israel? Is it a lot of people being in Israel? These are all important questions to consider. And I think to frame it in a certain way, are we idealistic? Are we enthusiastic? Are we thanking God simply because, or only because, we see the founding of the state of Israel as a step to Mashiach? Do we need to have a messianic perspective on this? Do we need to see this as Mashiach must be coming, and the way that I know Mashiach is coming is because now we have our own state, and that is a step in the process? Or can we say, can we separate these two things? Can we say Mashiach is something we daven for? This may or may not be part of the process. I hope it is, but that's not why necessarily I'm enthusiastic about about Yom HaAtzmaut, about Medinat Yisrael. There are other reasons too. Even if we have a way to go. So that's part of what I want to talk about. Yusuka here in Source 2, just to point out, again, this is not, this Tfilah Shalom Medinat is relatively recent. This is not something that was composed the minute that Jews started to be returning to Israel. This was composed after the state was founded. If you look at this, is Rabbi Avram Steinberg. He wrote really a remarkable work on this topic. It's called Prayers for the Welfare of the State of Israel. I have it here in source number 2. And he says as follows. This prayer was first published in Elul 5708 with the endorsement of the chief rabbis of Israel at the time. At the end of the prayer, the first time it was published, it stated, this was established and ordained by the rabbis of Eretz Yisrael, chief rabbis, Rabbi I. Herzog of Herzog, and Rabbi B.Z. Uziel. For years, there was a debate whether the person who had composed the prayer was Rabbi Herzog, both chief rabbis, or the writer, Shai Agnon. Okay, so that's the origin of this is from the chief rabbis and maybe Shai Agnon. It's actually quite a debate academically who really wrote the Tefillah L'Shalom Medina. Was the chief rabbis and Shai Agnon contributed? Was it mostly Shai Agnon and then the rabbis contributed? This is a matter of great dispute. For our purposes, it's worth noting that this is not something that was stated in any Gemara. This is not from some sort of Pasuk in Tanakh, at least explicitly so. This is not a Medrash. This is a very recent development that we are calling the time period that we live in definitively Reshit Tzmicha Gulatenu. So the question is, first to study, where does this phrase come from? Reshit, number one, that there is a beginning, that it is referred to as sprouting. Where does this come from? So Robert Steinberg here references the source and sorcery, among many, which refers to this idea called Atchata de Geula, that there is a beginning of redemption, that there are phases to redemption, that it won't necessarily be poof, Mashiach comes and everything is great, that there's a first step. And it's not necessarily a positive first step. It might be a very difficult first step. Take a look here in source number 3. The Gemara Megillah here talks about the sources for blessings in of Shmona Esrei. We have 19 blessings we recite in the Shmona Esrei. Ironically so, right? Shmona Esrei means 18, we really say 19. And the Gemara here in Megillah is actually discussing the order, why we say them in the order that we do. And now, when it gets to the seventh bracha, the bracha of Re'e B'Yanyenu, which we end Ga'al Yisrael, the bracha of redemption, it says as follows. Why is it that we say Ga'al Yisrael as our seventh bracha? So the Gemara answers, Mitosh Atidim Li Ga'al Bashvi'et, because the Jews are destined to be redeemed in the Shemitah year. So the seventh bracha, the seventh year of the Shemitah cycle, is when redemption will come, which is good to know. Lafiga kavua bashviyet. Therefore, they said it should be the seventh bracha. You know, this is an important thing to think about, right? That Mashiach is going to come Shemitah year. We could talk about the connections between Shemitah and Mashiach, but fine. But then the Gemara poses a problem. The Amar Mar b'shishit kolot b'shviyet melchamot b'motzai shviyet ben David ba. Right? We have a tradition that's not true. In the sixth year of the Shemitah cycle, there's going to be thunder, loud noises. On the seventh year of the Shemitah cycle, there will be war. After Shemitah comes, that's when Mashiach is going to come. So again, in this rabbinic tradition, Mashiach will not come during Shemitah year. He will come after Shemitah year. If so, why do we recite this bracha of redemption in the seventh blessing? Says Gemara, Machamanami Atchalta de Geula hi. That the war is the beginning of the redemption. That we can recite the blessing on redemption in the seventh bracha and say that that corresponds to Shemitah. Even though we don't think Mashiach will come in Shemitah year, even though the Beis HaMikdash won't be built until the next year, what will happen is there will be a war. But the war begins the process. So we see, based on this Gemara, pretty definitively, I would say, that there is a process to redemption, and that process might be an arduous and difficult one. It might not even be the greatest process. Even though redemption might start, and you might think this is horrible. This is a war. This is tough. But we can still refer to it as redemption. So that's the first idea of Reshit, the beginning of the redemption. We're not saying that this is Mashiach, there's more to go, but it is maybe, at least, Reshit. What about the idea of Smicha? Where does that come from? The idea that there's going to be a sprouting, that redemption sprouts. And when you think of sprouting, what kind of process do you think of? When you think of a seedling, right? You take a seed in the ground. I'm honestly not that good at gardening. Maybe. So I'm speaking sort of as watching my father do this. I don't know anyone in the crowd is, but what do? You take a seed, you plant it in the ground, you water it, you let it germinate, the sun rises, slowly it sprouts. The idea of tzmicha, again, is that this is going to be a gradual process. We see this in the blessing that we recite in Shemoneh Esrei called Etzemach David, the blessing over the kingdom of David. We say, Etzemach David me'avdecha mehera tatzmiach. The sprout of David, or the offspring of David, your servant, may you cause to sprout. Why do we refer to it as sprouting? It says Rabbi Yisachar Tamar, a 20th century rabbi in Israel, a commentary on the Yerushalmi here, because mitchunat Yeshua hi shemitpatechet veholechet ad Yeshua shlema kedugmat hatzmicha. That the way salvation works is that it's a gradual development. It gradually develops until there is a complete redemption. So the first point to make, though, and something I want to keep in mind then, is that this idea of Reshit Tzmicha Gulatenu acknowledges that this is not something immediate. It will take time. It is a gradual process. It may be painful. It may be that after Hakamat HaMedina, after Medina Yisrael, there will be wars, as there were, right? That what happened when the state of Israel declared independence? This is one of the reasons why there are those authorities which are reluctant to say a bracha on Hallel, on Yom HaAtzmaut. Not because they're not Zionistic necessarily. Why are they reluctant? What happened when Israel declared independence? Independence, rather. What? War. It was horrible. I mean, we won the war, but people died. Many. Right? So, the people in the crowd who are reluctant to say things like this, they'll say, well, how can you say that the founding of the state is the beginning of the redemption process? Look at all the people that have died. We have Yom HaZikaron and Yom HaAtzmaut. Where is the redemption in that? And the answer might be that there is, this is not Gulatenu, it's Reshet Tzmicha Gulatenu. It is the beginning of the sprouting of redemption. It is a painful, slow, gradual process. Okay? And that is the source of this phrase. So what I want to do now, and I think it's really worth thinking about. So what I'd like to do is present different approaches. The first approach is really one that is present. And I think we should be aware and grapple with this approach. There are those that actually see this as the beginning of Messiah. That when we say Reshit Tzmicha Gulatenu, it is part of the messianic process, that Mashiach is coming. It has to be Mashiach is coming, because if Mashiach wasn't coming, we could not have had a state. It's clear now that we do have a state, that Mashiach is going to come. And they relate the events that have happened in our recent history to events which actually portray the coming of Mashiach. That's the first approach. And what I'd like to consider is whether what we think about this approach, the advantages and disadvantages of it, and then finally suggest that even if we can adopt this approach in full, even if we're reluctant, maybe we still can say Reshit Tzmicha Gulatenu. So Rabbi Samrick here, I think, says it pretty eloquently. And it really is quite mind-boggling that the events that have happened in our time portray the redemption. He says as follows. There are those who say that the events linked to the establishment of the State of Israel are fully in keeping with the definition of the first flowering of redemption. Meaning, this is perfect. This is exactly what's supposed to happen when Mashiach comes. Everything that's happened is exactly on target. Right? You can look at the newspapers and say, Mashiach is going to come. This view regards a sequence of events which occurred in the last few centuries as signals by God which herald the coming of our final and complete redemption. Number one, the historical era is in keeping with the redemption, which means the time period in history, the amount of time that has elapsed, is consistent with when Mashiach should come, based on tradition. Mashiach should come around now. Number two, negative events. The birth pangs of the Messiah, the bad things that have happened in recent history, are also consistent with the coming of Mashiach, and obviously then positive events, right? The good things that have happened. Now, there, Rabbi Steinberg here gives many sources, all depicting all of these ideas. That there, the Gemara and Zohar and Midrash predict various bad things that have happened and good things that have happened, and we can say that they correspond with what has actually happened. So let's take a look at source number one, and number seven, and the Gemara here says as follows. And again, I'm just giving you one of many. Tanan Ve'aliyahu, Shisha Alafim Shana Havyalma. The world is going to be 6,000 years. Shnei Lafim Tohu, Shnei Lafim Torah, Shnei Lafim Yimona Mashiach. 2,000 years of Tohu, desolation, chaos. 2,000 years of Torah. 2,000 years of the period of the coming of Mashiach. The last 2,000 years are the period of the coming of the Mashiach. And the truth is, beyond just this in terms of the time period, beyond this, there are many writings of the Vilna Gaon but the Baal Shem Tov and their students, people, great Torah leaders who sent their disciples to Israel because they believed, based on this Gemara and other passages in the Zohar, that at this period in time, Mashiach is coming. This is when he's supposed to come. Mashiach is on his way. From the year 5600 and onward, we can expect Mashiach to come. And they believed, therefore, that what we should act accordingly. We should do things because we think Mashiach is coming. Right? Messianism, in a sense, is not just that we want Mashiach to come. It's that we should act accordingly. Because Mashiach is coming, we need to prepare. We need to go to Israel. We need to build. We need to farm and cultivate the land. Because he's on his way.
Rabbi, when's the day one?
Of the last 2,000, you said? Or the first 2,000? Right, so that's obviously a sort of a big topic discussed. Is it really 6,000 years? Obviously, that's a big discussion. We know, based on science, otherwise. But I imagine here, let's at least argue that we're starting from the count that we had. Whether that's from the birth of Adam HaRishon, so let's say after the 6 days of creation, whichever... not getting into those longer discussions, which, I think are relevant. Whoever Adam Rishon was, whether he was the first human or the first human, all those discussions take into account. But it certainly takes into it's starting from our account of history. So if it's the year 5780, so that's the last era of these 6,000 years. I don't know that helped at all.
We're in the third period of the 2000s.
The third 2000s, at the very end of it. So the question is what chaos means. And there's a lot to say about this Gemara. It's quite suggestive. There's a lot that needs to be studied. Chaos here doesn't just mean bad things happening. I think at a simple level, chaos means before there was any sort of organized society. Essentially, the 10,000 years is the very beginning of Avraham Avinu. So it's while there was paganism in the world, while there was no organized monotheistic religion, before people accepted God as the unmoved mover and creator of the universe, that's what the chaos is referring to. Yes, there are many bad things that happen in the first 2,000 years, in the second 2,000 years, and in the third 2,000 years. Certainly that's true, but the chaos is not just bad. It means, nothingness. If you could take a look at the Ramban at the very end of Bereishit, I could send it to you. He has a whole idea of how these things work. He argues that 2,000 years of Torah begin with Avram Avinu, because Avram was the first to recognize God. And even though Avram, according to the count, was born at the very end of the first 2,000 years, that also makes sense because it's not that at year 2,000 things start. It's a process. Now, to your point about the Holocaust, again, the 2,000 years of Mashiach are not 2,000 years where Mashiach will come for all 2,000. It's potentially when Mashiach could come. It's part of the process of Mashiach. And that gets to the second point. Just because you mentioned the Holocaust, and I'll take your reply. What about the Holocaust? That's obviously the elephant in the room. How could you say, right, these students, and this is a point that, as we'll see later, Rabbi Amital makes, these students of the Vilna Gaon who came to Israel in the 1800s, they didn't know that there was going to be a Holocaust, and they thought this is the beginning of the redemption. How can you say that the redemption process began and there was a Holocaust in the middle? It's very troubling. Incredibly troubling. So I think there is a reason to be reluctant, to be too optimistic because of that. However, they will point to the idea that the Gemara in source number 8 talks about horrible things happening when Mashiach comes. So it says the Gemara in source number 8. Amar v'yochan, amar isa dorsha mismai v'holei chakelo. If you see a generation which is steadily diminishing, he's as I said, it's wisdom and Torah study. But the generation, if the generation is shrinking, if people are dying, wait for him. Shenemar was amar nitoshia. Amar v'yochan, amar isa dorsha tzarot rabo ba'olav. If you see a generation which suffers many trials and travails, a generation of suffering, then you should wait for Mashiach. Right? When distress will come like a river that the breath of the Lord drives, that's the first pasuk. And then it says, Redeemer will come to Zion. So this messianic strand, which exists today of Zionism, would say that Hakamah Medina and the whole process of coming back to Israel is consistent with Mashiach coming. The Holocaust is consistent even with the period of Mashiach, because the tzaro, the horrible, distressful times, are predicted. The prophets talked about them. And there's going to be Chevle Mashiach, birth pangs of the Messiah. So again, we said three general ideas that point to the fact that our time period is consistent with portrayals of the Messianic period. First one we said was the generally what time in history, what year, and it's meant to be at the end of the 2000 year period from year 4000 to 6000. Number two, the horrible things that have happened, all the troubles that we've experienced, including I think World War II as well, and the pogroms and the Crusades. They're all part of that, they would argue. And number three, the good things that have happened. And here, and I think even if you're not, and even if we're not going to adopt the messianic approach per se, I think this is still worth reflecting on. There are many things that the prophets predict in Nevi'im, in Gemaros, which also correspond to what have happened, that are very positive. The ingathering of exiles. The fact that so many Jews have come back to Israel, which is clearly predicting the prophets. Clearly a telltale sign of Mashiach. Who knew that it would happen? Just hundreds of years ago, there were so few Jews in Israel. Now there are millions. There are millions. That is incredible. And there are many signs. Jewish people coming back to Judaism, although it's certainly not complete. But one of the signs that I always found meaningful is this Ramban in Vayikra. And the Ramban here is commenting on the Tochacha, which says that the land, Vishamalu Aleha Ayvechem, it says in the Torah that your enemies will lay the land desolate. The land will be desolate when your enemies are there. And the Ramban says that's not just a negative thing, it's also a positive thing. Chemash Amar Bekam Vishamu Aleha Ayvechem, he besorah tova mevaser bechol agaliyot, she'en artzena mekabalat ayvenu. This idea that the land will be desolate in the hands of our enemies is good news in all the exiles, that the land of Israel will not accept our enemies. Says the Ramban, the 13th century, you will not find another land which is naturally so productive, so fertile, which always produced, which was always settled for centuries, and now is completely desolate. From the time that we've left Israel, many nations have tried to settle Israel, and it never worked. As hard as they try, they're not successful. And this is Rabban talking, who actually got to Israel eventually at the end of his life. The Rabban is telling us that this has never been settled. All the nations of the world can settle Israel. And then you think about what's happened now. You think about how fertile Israel is. You think about all the agriculture there. And there are many that claim this also is a great sign of the redemption. The very fact that we've succeeded in settling Israel, in growing the land and cultivating it, is in and of itself a demonstration that Mashiach must be on his way. So again, to briefly summarize what this one perspective on Reshit Smicha Agulatenu is to say definitively, very confidently, that the period we live in now is the first step in the coming of Mashiach, because the fact that there is a Medina means Mashiach is coming, and the prophecies, the Nevi'im point to this, the bad things point to this, the good things point to this. Mashiach is on his way. This is one strand within Jewish thinking. Now, I'm sure some people are thinking this in the back of their mind. So let me ask, why would you be reluctant to accept this position? Why might someone say, I don't know, I'm not confident enough to say that Mashiach is coming? And what might be bad or unwise, unintelligent to say in saying definitively, this is Reshit Smicha Gulatenu? Why should we be reluctant to say definitively that we are at the cusp of Mashiach?
You've got to ask another crowd, the people who are, you know, Haredim, and the people who, you know, aren't in the modern Orthodox.
I don't want. I'm not asking for anyone Haredi. I'm just saying on a logical level. On a logical level, what is a bit presumptuous, or potentially misguided in saying that this is definitively the first step in Mashiach coming?
People are dying cruelly.
Okay, that's a good one. People are dying cruelly. And to say it in a very simple way, how do we really know? How do we really know? We can hope. We can daven.
How do we know Mashiach is coming?
Yeah, how do we know? And thinking of it another way, every time you say Mashiach is coming, and as you said, Paul, another person dies cruelly, what does that do? Well, for one thing, it can shatter people's hopes.
Especially today in the pandemic.
100%. So there are those who, although, and I'm not, and to Charlie's point, who, although they 100% acknowledge the gift of the State of Israel, who acknowledge that this is an amazing thing, and we should be so forward in expressing our gratitude toward Hashem and toward HaKadosh Baruch Hu in that we had the State of Israel. We're not talking about whether or not we should acknowledge that. Of course we should. But even if we do, there are those who would say, I don't know that we should be so explicit in saying Mashiach must be coming. That we should have a cautious optimism. Now, reasons for caution. If you look at the Rambam at the end of the Laws of Kings, this is the very end of the Rambam, where the Rambam talks about what Mashiach will do, what he needs to accomplish, signs that Mashiach is actually here, when should we believe someone. But at the end of this discussion, he says as follows, no one knows what will happen until it happens. The prophets were very inexplicit in predicting these things. The wise men don't have a strong tradition. They're simply trying to interpret the verses. There are arguments about Mashiach. Knowing what exactly will happen and when it will happen, that's not the main idea of our religion. A person should not spend a great deal of time learning these agado, learn these midrashim and sources which predict exactly when Mashiach will come. You shouldn't do that. Don't make that the main usage of your Torah learning. They don't make you a better person. Person calculate when Mashiach is going to come. And in Igaret HaTeman, the Rambam writes how to a generation where there were many false messiahs, and this is something we need to acknowledge, there have been many false messiahs. There was Shabtai Tzvi, there were others, and when that happens, it was horrible. And the results of it, the people who got their hopes up and then were disappointed, it's really a very deflating reality. So there is a certain... Yeah.
Rabbi, am I correct in saying that the Rambam believes that when the Mashiach does come, that we will come back to Karbanot? Is that correct?
That's a bit of a complicated question. I would say on a simple level, we will come back to Karbanot. There are people who say the Rambam maybe thinks we won't. But maybe you mind if we discuss that maybe another time, because we're sort of running out of time. I want to get to the concluding point, if you don't mind, Charlie. So, because I know Mincha is very soon. So I think that even those of us, all of us, I hope, who are so enthusiastic about the founding of the State of Israel, even if we are a bit reluctant to say definitively, Mashiach is coming, it has to be. And I'll say that, you know, I think there are those people out there who they see, like, anything happen, any great, you know, world event, and they'll say, oh, Mashiach is coming. Something bad happens, it's because Mashiach is coming, because when bad things happen, that's Chevli Mashiach. Something good's happening, Mashiach is coming. And that's always the way they reply. I personally feel reluctant to say things like that, because I don't know. I hope, but how do we know? Nevertheless, I think there is reason to say Rishitz Micha Kudotenu, whether we say we're davening to God that it should be Rishitz Micha Kudotenu, or whether we just say Rishitz Micha Kudotenu, I think there is reason to say it. And that is the idea of the obligation to await Mashiach, the obligation to be optimistic. The Rambam, in the Laws of Kings, and we won't look at it inside, the Rambam writes that we not only need to believe Mashiach will come, we're supposed to be mitzapeh. We're supposed to await. We're supposed to look toward Mashiach. We're supposed to constantly be aware of his imminent coming. And I think this idea of enthusiasm and excitement about Hakamat HaMedina, even in relation to the Messianic part of it, is helpful in that it enables us to be excited, to be optimistic, to believe that after everything we've gone through, whether we know it definitively or not, there are signs. There's reason to be excited about it. And being excited about our redemption is a very important thing, because I think it gives us hope, which we need. And I think it makes us more eager to have that endurance, to endure all the things that we go through as a nation. And so I think saying Rishitz Micha Gudlatenu, even if we're not definitive, yes, this is the time, is at least helpful in helping us await Mashiach's coming. And I'd like to just end with what Rehuda Amital, who gave a long speech about Rishitz Micha Gudlatenu right before the Hitnakut, right? Before the Jews that had the disengagement. And and Jews were kicked out of Gaza and Gush Katif, and there was a very negative feeling in Israel at that time. But Rabbi Tal writes that, look, I don't know what this means about Mashiach coming. Is Mashiach coming or not? We just don't know. But I do know that I can be thankful to God for giving us Israel. Whether or not I meet Mashiach, whether or not I don't, to be thankful that God has given us this amazing gift of having our own country. We can be excited about that, even if we're not definitively sure that Mashiach is coming. And so I guess since Mincha is coming, as Yom HaAtzmaut does come to a close, and we continue to say Rishitz Micha Gudlatenu, let it be both a prophecy that Mashiach will come in the imminent future, let it be a prayer that he does come, and either way, regardless of whether or not it is today, tomorrow, or in a bunch of years, let us still at least be thankful and have such gratitude for the amazing blessings that God has granted to us. So with that, we'll imagine we'll begin Mincha shortly. Right. Thank you everyone for joining.
Oh, yeah. Rabbi, can we have the source sheet again? Do you mind emailing
it? Yeah, of course. Harry Shore, it's all yours.